It's Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
We'll be in and out. Anyway, you've never seen my lab.
Oh, great. I get to see your nerd lab.
Hello. I hate it when I forget to come up with a joke to start the show. Completely forgot about
that. Have you thought about, hello, Jared?
Yeah, what's up, Jared? Sidekick. What's her sidekick from now? Sidekick, not side chick. That'd be a little weird.
Yeah, I don't think the partner would be very happy about that.
Jeremy Moss will join us later in the show. Some Mountain West football at the Mountain West title game. Some strange bowl matchups. It's a shame that UNLV isn't better at football so that UNLV fans could complain about the Mountain West in football as much as they do in basketball. It would be great. Like, Wyoming's not in a bowl game despite being bowl eligible. Meanwhile, BYU is playing in a Mountain West bowl game instead of a Mountain West team. It's tremendous. So we'll talk to Jeremy about that. Got some Golden Knights on the show. They play tonight. Seattle's getting an expansion team. But we start with our favorite, UNLV basketball. Oh, yeah, and I'm going to yell at Nevada's football coach, Jay Norvell, because he's an idiot. But we start with UNLV basketball, and I have sort of a big picture question on UNLV basketball. They don't play until Saturday. They've got a football schedule for the next couple of weeks where they only play on Saturdays. But I've got a big picture question on UNLV, and it's sort of simply, when will UNLV basketball be good? And good in the sense of like NCAA tournament good. Because you can make the argument that last year's team was good, but they never sniffed the NCAA tournament once they got into conference play. And the reason I ask this is because Marvin Menzies, after the game on Saturday, after the loss to Cincinnati, was asked about the seniors, and he sort of gave a long answer talking about how the seniors played in that game, but he also went sort of big picture with it, and here's some of what he said about his seniors.
We want to be in a get old, stay old, and you know, that's preferably with guys that have been with you for 3 or 4 years. This is his third year. Noah's first and Shakur's second, so inevitably the paradigm will look with four, you know, juniors and seniors that are, have been there 3 and 4, maybe sometimes five. That's when you're going to be special.
So, there's Marvin Menzies. And he's kind of punting on this year's group.
I don't know if I agree with that, but was there a car backing up in the background of that sound?
Possibly.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure I'm not going insane.
I believe it's the elevator.
Okay.
There's an elevator outside where they hold the press conferences, like a, what do they call them? Freight elevators?
Yeah.
Is that the right term? Yeah, I think that's what it is.
So
sometimes they don't shut the door.
So the Sanchez, when Sanchez gives a press conference, we get to hear
about a 9-10.
Boom, donk.
Yeah.
And when Marvy. When Marvin Menzies is giving a press conference, we get to hear beep, beep, yeah, beep.
But that's just because people are not closing doors. They're not respecting doors, is how it is. Like, you wouldn't hear that if they would shut the door in the press conference room for Marvin Menzies.
People have no respect.
That's right.
No, but back to what you were saying, I don't know about that, but he has been preaching this.
What do you mean? He says that's when you're going to be special, and he's referring to when he has seniors that have been there for 3, 4, and sometimes 5 years. These guys haven't been there for 3, 4, so he's saying this year's team's not going to be special is what he's saying.
I mean, I feel like we're being uber pedantic, but
that's what he's telling you.
All right.
Like, the question I pose, when will UNLV be good again? Menzies is telling you it's not this year. To me, it's strange. To me, it's very strange what he's saying. Because what he's trying to do there is he's trying to say that Noah Robotham, Shakur Justin, and Chris Clyburn don't have enough experience. And that's a very strange thing to say. Because Noah Robotham played Division I basketball at Akron for 3 years. Sat out at UNLV, was here last year, and is now playing in his fourth year of eligibility and his fifth year in college overall. Shakur Justin played 2 years at JUCO and is now 2 years a Division I athlete. Chris Clyburn played 1 year at JUCO and 3 years Division I athlete. So, like, that's a lot of experience. And Marvin Menzies is trying to tell us that it's not enough or that it needs to be experience with him for it to count. Like, I just feel like he's unfairly casting aside the experience those guys have.
Well, and that's fair enough. And maybe he's flipping it on himself and saying, like, my system, it takes 4 years. Like, I need a group of five seniors running my system for 4 years in order for the system to produce the way that I want it to produce.
I went back and looked at some of his New Mexico State teams because my assumption was he's saying that because that's what he did at New Mexico State. And he had two teams that jumped out to me in this regard. 2015, they made the NCAA tournament as a 15 seed. His top two players that year were seniors. One had been there for 5 years because he got hurt 1 year, so he's a fifth-year senior, and one was in his fourth year. They had another senior that had been there for 3 years that was a starter, and then they had Pascal Siakam, who's the best player he's ever coached and was a freshman that year. Pascal Siakam, by the way, is tearing up the NBA at the moment. That guy is incredible. So 2015, he had two guys that were 4 and 5 years in his program as seniors, and then another senior that was in his third year, and then a really good Pascal Siakam. In 2012, they were 13th seed in the NCAA tournament, and three of his top 4 or 5 players were guys that were seniors and in their fourth year with him at New Mexico State. So he had a couple of teams in New Mexico State where he had seniors and he had them for like as long as you possibly can have seniors and turn those into good teams. So the question sort of becomes for UNLV, can he replicate that here? Like, can he get kids to stay here for 4, sometimes 5 years? And is that something that'll lead to success in the Mountain West? I don't know. Like, college basketball is not a place where kids stay for 4 and 5 years. Like, that's not really a reality for most players. Most guys go somewhere. They go pro or they transfer. Like, that happens a lot. So it's hard to have, like, oh, we're going to have this entire recruiting class stay until they graduate 4 years later. It just doesn't happen that much. So can he do that at UNLV? I don't know, because I don't know that anybody really can do that at a high level in college basketball. We'll see. If we look at UNLV now and we try to figure out, all right, when is Marvin Menzies going to have some kids here for 4 years? Technically next year, he'll have Shekna Dembele and Georgi Slavonchinin. Two guys come in the program as freshmen his first year. Next year will be their fourth year in the program together. I don't think you're looking at Georgi Slavonchinin and Shekna Dembele and saying, yep, those are the two that are leading us to the Mountain West tournament title. So push it back one more year when you have Amori Hardy, Mbaki Jong, Tervell Beck. You got Jay Green and Ben Coupette possibly as well. But those three, Hardy, Jong, and Beck.
Yeah, I
all
like
came
it.
Came in as freshmen, conceivably would all be here for 4 years and would all be playing, you know, either coming off the bench or starters minutes for all 4 years. So if we go through that timeline and this thought process of Marvin Menzies of when is he going to be special? Oh, it's when I have seniors for 4 years. It's the 2020-2021 season when Hardy, Beck, and Jong are your seniors.
I actually really like, if those three stay together, I think that that team could be incredibly fun to watch.
You'd also have Bryce Hamilton, Joel Tomboy, Trey Woodbury, and Jonathan Chamwechachua as juniors in their third year.
You could almost have a shooting squad.
No.
I
Who
know.
Shoots from that team?
Hammond.
Jay Green?
I like Jay Green.
So that's sort of the answer to, like, If we're using Marvin Menzies's logic of, hey, when is they going to be good again? When are they going to be special? Oh, it's when he has seniors for 4 and 5 years. That's what the timeline is. It's this Hardy, Beck, Jong group being seniors in 2020-2021. My question on that group, though, Hardy, Beck, Jong, those can't be your three best players.
Why not?
They're not good enough.
Well, they're not good enough now.
They're not going to get that much better by the time they're seniors.
Well, okay. Where's your crystal ball?
What do you mean? We've been over this.
I don't know.
I do not believe players improve as much as people like to put on them.
I agree with you. Fundamentally, I agree with you. But there's also the difference between a 19-year-old and a 21-year-old as far as body. Just having, like, that 3 years of lifting weights compared to
sure.
1 year of lifting weights.
Sure. But like we're taught.
I'm just going
to
say.
They need to get a lot better if those are going to be your three best and you're going to be an NCAA tournament team.
Nunu Beck is injuring players now. Think if he puts on another 2 years of muscle, we could have him out there as just like a free safety.
Now, with those three players, all three of them I like as far as players. If they're your like third and fifth and sixth best players, you've probably got an NCAA tournament team.
Yeah, then you're Duke, like, right?
No, Hardy's Duke's third best player was the number three player in the class last year. Like, we're talking about Mbaki Jong, who it's like, okay, he looks good, and he's averaging like 9 points a game.
No, I'm okay. Well, I was more or less running on the principle of you have two players that are just the best players in the country, and then your three through seven guys are like, yeah, they're really good fourth-year seniors or fifth-year seniors.
It's not Duke anymore. Duke is, let's go get the three best players in the class and see if that works. Oh, it does. How nice. If you have Hardy, Beck, and Jong, and, like, you know, whatever, two or three of them start, but, like, maybe it's Bryce Hamilton. Maybe Bryce Hamilton is your best player that season. And then maybe, you know, you had a transfer or some other recruit that's really good that's sort of your second best player. And then Hardy and Jong and Beck are sort of complementary type players or sort of the next level of players. That type of team could be really good. But I don't think that that group of seniors is good enough to sort of do it on their own. Now, we talk about this timeline here. That is, including this year, three seasons away.
How many years does Coach Menzies have on his deal?
What did he sign, a 5-year deal, and this is year three? Is that right? I think that's right.
So next year he'll get an extension because you can't recruit on a 1-year contract.
After next season, you're saying?
Yeah.
Possibly.
It'll be
if they're no good, probably not.
I don't know, but it's still.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, we're talking about the timeline here. If that's the timeline, that's a long time to wait. And you already have bad crowds at Thomas and Mack, and you already have people that aren't happy with the basketball program and Marvin Menzies. So that's a long time to not be good. That's a long time to sell people on, hey, 2020, 2021, that's when we're going to be good again. It's a long time to wait. Especially when Eric Musselman goes to Nevada and is in year two, is like, all right, we're going to win the Mountain West tournament. Year three, all right, we're ranked fifth in the country. It's a tough sell. And I would assume Marvin Menzies gets that long as things aren't like, you know, as long as they don't finish this year with 8 wins or something like that. Like, you assume Marvin Menzies is going to get that long, but it's just going to be a hard sell over the next 2 years if that's indeed what it is. They could be good next year. Like, next year they could go to the NCAA tournament, but they've got to get a better recruiting class in. They currently don't have a really great one. So, I don't know. We'll see. I just don't think the roster now is good enough to be an NCAA tournament level team now, next year, 2 years from now, 3 years from now. Like, I think there's got to be better talent on the roster than what they have now. And even these guys developing, I think they've got to bring in higher level players to get to the NCAA tournament. So, we'll see.
How, I guess, is my, like...
Recruiting!
I understand that, but...
I'll send you an article called The Bag Man here after the show. Technically Correct, brought to you by Boyd Gaming. Try out the Connected Sports Betting app. It is the easiest way to bet sports in Vegas, and it is free to download.
There are so many ways to be satisfied at the Orleans Hotel and Casino. Enjoy cocktails and steaks the way nature intended at Alder and Birch. Visit the newly updated Prime Rib Loft. Experience the all-new Bailiwick Gastro Pub to share unique dining selections, try new craft draft beers, and enjoy great live music. Dine at Andori Asian Kitchen for authentic Chinese entrees, or choose from a large selection of sushi and Japanese cuisine. Check out the all-new Copper Whisk Cafe, open 24 hours with a menu that is sure to entice any palate. So savor the latest and greatest variety of flavors at the Orleans.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants.
No, I don't want to go to a party in your pants.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants!
Bischoff's Briefs.
Very well.
UNLV fans are trying to nickname Bryce Hamilton Hammy.
Is this a good nickname?
No. That's a terrible nickname.
It is simple, though. I'm pushing back on it. When I say UNLV fans, by the way, it's like three of you on Twitter. Go away. but I'm going to end up having to ask Bryce Hamilton about this, aren't I?
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to get shot down like I did with Robot Ham.
No, but Robot Ham was like, ha, 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 and then he was like, no. Where this is, hey, your last name's Hamilton. Can we shorten that up? Can't we, like, call, like... Can't we make like a vague reference to the musical Hamilton or something that's not just Hammy?
Nope, Hammy's better than whatever you're going to come up with.
Well, the fact that we call one guy Nunu, and I'm not understanding where the heck that came from.
Some childhood nickname.
Oh, see? Oh,
he
okay,
doesn't know
so like,
either.
So, oh, it's like Buddy Heald.
Sure.
His nickname Buddy came from the fact that his mom thought he looked like Bud from Married with Children.
No, Turvobeck doesn't know.
Oh, he legitimately doesn't know?
We asked him yesterday, and he was like, I don't know, that's just what people have called me. Like, he's just been called Nunu, and he doesn't know why people called him Nunu growing up, but that's what he gets called now.
Was he in a lot of classes with a lot of other...
with other Turvels?
Yeah.
I don't know. I was like, all right, you're the new Turvel. We're calling you Nunu. I have no idea. He doesn't know. No clue.
All right.
But yeah, we'll ask Bryce Hamilton if he likes Hammy sometime.
Are we going to have, like, a Facebook or Twitter contest? New nickname for Bryce Hamilton. No. Cody Glass has been named to Team Canada's camp roster ahead of the World Junior Championships.
So Glass was the first pick the Golden Knights made in the 2017 draft. 34 players get selected to this camp roster, 23 make the actual roster. So if you're watching for the future of the Golden Knights, you hope he makes it so you can watch him play, because George McPhee likes to overcook his prospects rather than let them play in the NHL too soon. Also, Nick Suzuki, who George McPhee traded to get Max Pacioretty, he's on the camp roster as well. So you can watch Nick Suzuki and be like, oh, or he'll be terrible and you'll be like, oh, thank God.
Should I tell my Cody Glass story or no?
You have a Cody Glass story?
No, it's not a story about him. It's a story about me being dumb.
Oh, well, okay, sure.
Well, no, I walked in here when Kinbin was co-hosting with you, and I was like, yeah, I saw all your tweets. I realized there is a player named Glass, but I was like, man, they're hitting the puck off the wall a lot. And then you guys made fun of me for like 10 minutes straight.
Erik Brännström should also make the Sweden roster. You can watch him play too.
The Golden Knights will host a toy drive for Sunday's game against the Dallas Stars.
So they're looking for new toys or cash donations. It all goes to the CASA Foundation, which is for foster children in Clark County. The first 1,000 people to donate at the game will get a poster. These posters, they're like drugs for Golden Knights fans, if you're not aware. They give out posters for every game, and
I've
people love
them. I've seen some walls in the building that
it's
are...
like drugs. There's only 1,000 of these. I don't know what they look like, but... these are going to be a hot commodity. But yeah, the players also, this CASA Foundation, they also skated around City National Arena yesterday with foster kids with this foundation yesterday. So they're doing a lot with that, so take some toys.
Eric Halla will miss at least the next 2 months. So he's month to month.
That's from Gerard Gallant, and that's like...
Whoa!
That's like actual info. Like at least 2 months. It's not like great, because that could be he's back in 3 months or his career is over, but it's actual. It's a somewhat of a timeline. So I'll read this tweet from Senbin, which is quoting Gallant. He got back yesterday. I saw him this morning walking in on crutches. He's going to be a while. Then when asked if Halla was expected to return this season, this year, oh, I wouldn't rule that out. I know it's going to be for the next 2 months for sure, but after that, I don't know. So he could miss the whole year.
But hey, we learned a thing.
Yeah.
We learned that in the meeting that Gallant had, they said 2 months, and that was about all he got from the meeting.
Yeah, normally a thing this organization doesn't do, give out information. Also on Paul Stastny, who's back skating, Gallant said that he's probably still a couple of weeks away. So he's been skating. We know he's alive. We know he's capable of still skating, but we won't see him anytime soon.
The Golden Knights play the Washington Capitals tonight at 7 p.m.
It's the first time the Capitals are back in T-Mobile Arena since they won the Stanley Cup in June. They did already play them in Washington this year, and the Capitals won 5-2. So that didn't go very well. It's a big game for Hanukkah.
Yeah, it is.
It is. It's the toughest one of the four during their Hanukkah schedule. So they win this, I think they'll be in good shape to get in the playoff spots by Hanukkah. If they lose, might have to run the Hanukkah table. Are there tables in Hanukkah?
Ryan Wallace will join us later this week.
I'm not done with my Golden Knights Capitals takes. Get out of here. Marc-Andre Fleury against the Capitals, since he's been with Vegas, has not been great. First game he ever played against the Capitals while in a Vegas jersey, 26 save shutout. Really good. Second game, they won, gave up 3 goals. Third game was game 1 of the Stanley Cup final. Gave up 4 goals, but they still won. Then they lost the next 4 games, and he gave up 3 goals, 3 goals, 6 goals, 4 goals. And in the first meeting this year, he gave up 4 goals. So since he's been a Golden Knight, Marc-Andre Fleury's save percentage in 8 games against the Capitals is .873, which is really bad.
Yep, that doesn't seem good.
So,
do we want to try Subban?
Probably not, because 873 is better than 0.
Raiders defensive end Arden Key recorded 1 quarterback hit and 1 hurry in 25 pass rush snaps against the Chiefs. I got so close.
So that's from Pro Football Focus. He ranks 97th out of 116 in edge rushers in the NFL. Not great.
How many total pass rush snaps were there? Like, maybe he's working. I'm just trying to find the silver lining here, man.
The reason I'm bringing this up is because the Raiders are tanking, so we're somewhat ignoring actually breaking down any part of their play because it's somewhat irrelevant. What is relevant, though, is, like, the young guys and the rookies. And so, like, Arden Key is one of the rookies. He's one of the defensive linemen. He's one of the guys that's like, oh, he's a first-round talent. Raiders got him later in the draft. What a steal. And he hasn't really been good this year. Like, if you're trying to find the positive play from the rookies, Arden Key has not been it. Gary and Conley, though, our faux rookie cornerback, because technically he was drafted in 2017, only played 2 games, he gave up 1 catch for 5 yards against the Chiefs in 33 pass snaps. What the hell are they called? Pass snaps. That sounds wrong.
Passing attempts.
I don't know.
Passes?
He did drop an interception, though.
Yeah. I mean,
those are helpful when you intercept a pass.
They are, but not for the ultimate goal.
Oh, that's true. That's a good point. He wants to drop the interception. Show, I can get here. Look at me.
I can do it.
Nope, I'm not catching it. Nope, this is bad news.
But I need you to go get somebody so that I'm not constantly having to do this for us to remain in a game.
But Gary Conley's been, like, he's had good numbers the last 3 or 4 weeks. Since they decided, we shouldn't play Dominic Rogers-Cromartie all of the snaps. We should play these young guys all the snaps. Gary Conley's been really good.
I will say one last thing about the Chiefs. The Chiefs, like, offensive line, they're not woe blow you away good, but the one thing that they have is continuity. Like, the same group has been together with, like, only, like, 1 or 2 changes over the last, like, 3 years. So they all, like, it's not like guys are getting injured and you're having to start the 5th-round pick at left tackle. It's pretty much Mitchell Schwartz is anchoring that bad boy. So I would be more surprised had he had more hurry-ups or more sacks or quarterback hits because of how, like, strong that unit is.
Yeah, but he's only 97 out of 116 for the whole season. So, like, it's not just the Chiefs game. He just hasn't done much the whole year, which, I mean, to be fair to him, I think the Raiders linebackers have combined for they have 1 forced fumble, 0 fumble recoveries, 0 interceptions, and I think 0 sacks as well. Like, the Raiders linebackers have somehow been worse than the defensive line.
UNLV linebacker Jacob Rongminger will transfer. What?
He's a grad transfer.
Is that not how you pronounce his last name?
Rominger. He will be a grad transfer. He didn't see much of the field for UNLV. 4 tackles in 7 games. He announced it on Twitter, though. So we'll see how many more guys transfer. We probably won't actually find out because UNLV doesn't, like, send out press releases every time a kid transfers from their school. So, like, if we see it on Twitter or whatever, Tony Sanchez will answer. Like, if you ask a direct question, hey, did this guy transfer? He'll tell you, but they're not going to go out of their way to tell you if a kid transferred or not. So we'll see who else transfers. We have fun transfer stuff to talk about a little bit later because the head coach in Nevada, Jay Norvell, is all pissy because he lost two of his best players, and it's terrific. It's just great. I love when coaches get pissy.
God, it's like the whole premise of the show. The NHL has voted to give an expansion team to Seattle.
So 32nd team, basically when Vegas got a team, they had to at some point give another city a team because having 31 teams is stupid because you have one division with seven teams while the rest have eight, and it's just stupid is what it is. So there's a couple details that are now official that we've kind of known or at least expected. One, Arizona will move to the Central Division. So the Golden Knights division will lose a member so that Seattle can play in the Pacific rather than Seattle playing in the Central, which would make no sense. So Arizona goes to the Central.
How does Arizona playing in the Central make sense?
Well, if you look at the map, they're like the most eastern
of the West.
Yeah, because everybody's in California. You can't move the Canadian teams because they're like at the North Pole, and they'll be in the same division as the Dallas Stars or something like that.
Didn't we find out Seattle's further north than...
Toronto, I believe.
Yeah.
But that has nothing to do with east and west.
Is there not a northern... No. I'll shut up now.
So the Coyotes are going to the Central. Expansion teams are supposed to be bad. Vegas obviously wasn't. I think Seattle will be bad, so it's probably... Like, the Pacific Division is bad. They're adding an expansion team. It's probably going to make the division worse, even though Arizona's not very good either. So we'll see. The expansion draft rules are going to be the exact same for Arizona as they were for Vegas. The main difference, though, is that the Golden Knights are exempt from the expansion draft. So what I'm intrigued to see is how does George McPhee become some sort of loophole in the expansion draft process? I don't exactly know what he's going to do, but like somehow, like, because George McPhee is going to be in this weird position where every other team in the NHL has to lose a player to the expansion draft, except him. So somehow these teams that have to lose a player, somehow George McPhee is going to be like, I can help you out. Let me help you. And I don't know exactly what it's going to be, but something, he's going to do something that's going to be fun. It's going to be like, ooh, I don't know if that was good or not, but that was intriguing. And that's what I'm excited for, because they don't have to put a player in. And that's a positive for the Golden Knights because they don't lose a player. The reason they don't is Bill Foley doesn't get any of the money. Seattle pays an expansion fee. All of the other owners split it, but Bill Foley's not going to get any cut of that. And in return, he doesn't have to lose a player in the expansion draft, which as a fan, you should be thrilled about because your team stays intact. Your team gets to stay as strong as it is, whereas everybody else has to lose a player. And the only cost is your owner doesn't get whatever ends up being $20 million, something like that. Who cares? I mean, Bill Foley does, but if you're a fan, who cares? Who cares that he doesn't get $20 million? So, yeah. I'm excited to see what George McPhee does. Also, they're not starting until 2021-22. This is, like, a long way off. This is longer than my Marvin Menzies in the NCAA tournament timeline. This is, like, you don't know he's going to be in the NCAA tournament, and then Seattle's going to start playing. So this is, like, 45 years away is what it feels like.
So what we need to do is we need to get our voiceover guy to go, who will be there first? And then each day we'll do an update on, does Seattle have a hockey team? No. Has UNLV reached the NCAA tournament? No. No? Okay. I'm going to go to commercial.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff, brought to you by Boyd Gaming.
Is UNLV the worst team in the conference?
We just recorded our week 7 preview podcast. We're kind of looking ahead at that point. San Jose State might get their only victory when UNLV travels to their stadium.
I called it!
Jared's been telling us that the UNLV is going to upset Utah State or San Diego State, but they're definitely losing to San Jose State this year.
Well, they're not upset Utah State at all. It's going to be worse than that in the Mexico game.
Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
Joining us now is Jeremy Moss with Mountain West Wire. It's MWWire.com and it's at Jeremy Moss on Twitter. Moss is MAUSS. Jeremy, Thank you for joining us. We're going to do some Mountain West football, but we'll start sort of more focused on UNLV, Tony Sanchez. So Tony Sanchez is coming back next year, and there was pretty much a, somewhat of an ultimatum laid down by the athletic director here, Desiree Francois, saying that they expect to be bowl eligible. Do you like, what's your take on that whole setup of he is coming back? Is that a good thing? And like, is it smart to say bowl eligible or you're fired pretty much?
Well, sort of. It makes sense because when I talked to you before, UNLV is a job where 4 or 5 years may not cut it to get the improvement you want to see. So maybe 6, 7, even 8, not in some cases, might be appropriate. Here's the thing, you have a new AD in town. It's basically like it's a one-year job interview, essentially. It's like you're around. We saw how close you were the year before. You had some injuries this year, specifically Armani Rogers going out. So I don't know if there's a money issue or whatever to keep around, whether it's Furtado money coming in or just a buyout. But it's fine with it because they had some bad luck this year. And that's, and the AD maybe is like, well, maybe we just want to go with who we have, keep consistency, and maybe doing it for other programs that haven't looked. Obviously, football is most high profile, but I think if it's like a one-year job tryout.
So my favorite thing is during the season, UNLV fans want Tony Sanchez fired, and like names that get thrown around are like, go get Les Miles. And obviously, all right, that's a great reaction. But I guess my question is like, we all know Les Miles is not an actual candidate for UNLV football ever, but like, from outside of Las Vegas, how bad is the perception of a UNLV football head coaching job?
Pretty bad. It's better than what it was, we could say that, because they haven't been, well, it's not a nice way to put it, they haven't been just awful. They've just been bad, I guess, the past couple years. And because there has been some improvement, and they see talent there. Rodgers, look what the running game has done when Lexington Thomas actually tries and get his butt kicked to, hey, show some heart out there and play. He can do pretty good. So there's talent there. The receiving talent's been good for a while. They have the guy there, fresh from now, is doing pretty good. So there's some talent. It's not as bad as it used to be, but it's still, like, I'm trying to see what jobs are right now. It's like it's well below it, within the conference. Let's just go there with not potential, because every coach is like, I could go to UNLV. I'm 3 hours from Southern California. I'm a couple hours from Texas. I'm not too far on a quick planner. I could turn it around. Well, that'll take the right coach, but there's never been the right coach to turn it around. John Robinson came to town and he couldn't do anything years ago. It's lower pack of Mountain West, I would say. But nationally, it's like, cool, Vegas is a great place. And people think just because location and because what basketball has done historically, there's a chance it could be really good, but nobody's been able to figure that out.
What jobs would you put it ahead of in the Mountain West?
Well, it probably should be the other way around. What should be below, really, if you think about it.
Yeah, that's what I meant. I meant to phrase it that way. You're right. Answer your own question.
Worst job. San Jose State's at the bottom. I'd say maybe Air Force just because how tough it is, but they could win with what they do. As for, like, probably just San Jose State, New Mexico, really.
So it would be ahead of New Mexico at this time?
I'd still think so, yeah.
Okay. If we look at sort of this bowl or bust scenario, their schedule next year, non-conference is Southern Utah and Arkansas State coming here. Then they go to Vanderbilt and to Northwestern. They'll play the Western Division as always. And then their crossover games are Boise State, Wyoming, and Colorado State. Are there 6 wins there?
I think it could be. In a non-conference play, Southern Utah should be a win. Arkansas State, iffy, because they're usually pretty good in the Sun Belt. They're not winning either of those Big Ten SEC team, even though Vanderbilt, they're a little better. They play Boise, that's unfortunate. Wyoming, the last half of the year, they've been really good. I think there could be. It depends how Hawaii turns around, because Hawaii looked great but then looked terrible. They fell off. San Jose State's looked a little bit better, but they're still not there. Nevada, we'll talk about in a minute, but they, if they keep going trajectory, they're well above UNLV. I'd say it's a close maybe. It's probably 6 wins, I'd say, just looking here in first week of December, maybe.
All right. Tell me if this is too lazy of a comparison for me, but let's take Fresno State, who goes 1-11. They hire Jeff Tedford, and he is 21-6 with a Mountain West title since then. Is it lazy of me to compare that to Tony Sanchez, who's only won 20 games in 4 years since taking over a UNLV job that was 2-10 before he got here?
No, well, it's the win total. It's an easy comparison. I wouldn't say lazy. Difference is Fresno had a ton of talent there, because if you could tell, if you bring in a coach, as Tedford has been kind of an after cow, kind of bouncing around CFL, just doing some random coaching gigs around the country, hanging out Washington for a bit. if you're a coach that comes in, yes, he's a great, I assume, I'm going to say Tepper's better than Coach Sanchez, mostly because of experience he's had at that level, at the higher level than high school and now UNLV. But if you can turn around a team that good, it's more talent than it is, I'd say more talent than anything. Because Tim Drueter, what the heck was he doing there? If you have these guys who, Keyshawn Johnston, you look at this running game for you, Jeff Allison, like, how could he not win? And the turnover from year one, from zero to year one with Tedford was minimal. And so it's just it's a talent issue where they just had a terrible coach. Sanchez is a fine coach. He's doing okay. But then again, UNLV is always a dearth of talent, has nothing there. And so just a win total, yeah, it stinks when Fresno has a bad year and they turn around just like that and UNLV can never do it.
It's more about Tim Drueter than anything else is what you're telling me. Okay.
Yeah.
If we look at the Mountain West, so you end up this season and you have Boise State go 11-3, Fresno State's at 10-4, San Diego State was 10. The best thing about San Diego State's 10-3, and all I see on Twitter is their fans being pissed at them having a bad season. It's terrific. But I'm curious from your standpoint, would the Mountain West be better off if they had one team go 13 or 14 if they're one of the Hawaii teams takes next game? Would they be better off with one team going undefeated rather than having Utah State and Boise State or Fresno State, San Diego State, whatever group? Would they be better off with just one team being great?
Yeah, because they've had I don't know how many, but multiple years with three teams with 10 or more wins, and nobody cares. Like, the Mountain West Tyler game was one of the better games of this whole weekend, not just because snow, but as a defensive game, as a pretty good matchup, because what was going on compared to the other Power 5 stuff, Big 10 and all that, even ACC. But look at the American, like, the Cincinnati's pretty good, but them and UCF, that's about it. And we've mentioned all the time, the only difference between UCF, which give a million miles of credit for not losing, and then, I don't know, Memphis did. I think Oresco gave him a phone call to say lay over in the second half, but it's one team is bad. Yeah, if you have one team, they're going to look, oh, great, Boise's in the Fiesta Bowl. You've got, even in Hawaii, they're in the Sugar Bowl. Look how great it gives you more promotion for the conference, because look at these bowl matchups. There's good games to be had, but you're not playing a great team. Oh, who cares? Boise's playing Boston College. Whatever. Give me a break. Who cares? Arizona State could be iffy. They've been interesting with Herm Edwards just because of term, but I'd rather have the one team go 12-0, 13-14-0, and go play in the Peach or Cotton Bowl and have a bunch of 8-win teams, because the bottom of the America is pretty garbage, and they're getting credit for UCF being great when they have, like, maybe two good teams. The Mountain West has had three teams ranked throughout the year, and maybe even, like, four decent teams. Like, look how good Nevada's doing. Nobody pays a dang attention to them their last past month. Look at Wyoming winning four straight in a row with really terrible talent at quarterback and no receivers to speak of.
Yeah, for some reason, I was looking at last year's standings when I said San Diego State had a 10-win season. They were only 7-5.
They could have had 10 wins.
Terrible year. Fire Rocky Long. Terrible season.
Oh, boy. Careful.
So, if we look at the bowl games, is it a big deal to you that Wyoming is bowl eligible but not in a bowl game?
No. People are getting asked, like, that's someone getting Twitter. I'm like, I sometimes get too many Twitter poking fights, sword fights with people, but I also kind of do some stuff for a radio station in Salt Lake, and so part of it is, yeah, BYU. I know them quite well. I know Utah State. I cover all those teams, and they tried to convince me Wyoming would outdrop BYU at the Idaho Potato Bowl, and I laughed my butt off a million times. I'm like, BYU would outdraw 80% of the country any bowl game, Wyoming any time of the year. I don't care. And they're like, no, they'll. I'm like, so I'm like, be quiet. No. And they're complaining, oh, the bowl trade-off, that's Wyoming's spot. No, it's not. There were other trades. You have Boise's not going to Mountain West Bowl game, and neither is San Diego State. There's a trade-off to get people there, because Boise was never going to go to the home game at their own stadium. I thought a really good matchup could have been Utah State-Buffalo in that game, but they got NIU-BYU. But, well, I mean, they came on strong, so it's great, but there's just not enough spots. That's all it comes down to. Losing the points eligible is a big deal, but if there's any 6-win teams and you're not in the power conference and there's not enough spots, you're going to be left out. And it sucks, because they have played well the past month, but got to win more games. I told us they want to blame Craig Thompson losing a bowl spot, but it's like Chargers leaving San Diego was the real reason that bowl's gone, not anything Craig Thompson did or didn't do.
If you could throw out all the records in the Mountain West, who would you want to put in a bowl game?
Who's like not any team?
Yeah.
I don't know. every team's in there, I think, is deserving. I'm not going to stick a team's losing record in there if that's what you're asking.
Oh, come on.
Do I want to see UNLV play? No. Do I want to see San Jose State? No.
This is what we were looking for.
Maybe Air Force, because that could be some fun, but no. I want to see what Nico Evans could do against a real good defense, but There's nobody. It's fine. What happened is perfectly fine. If you complain, it does suck. But here's the thing: Myrtle Beach is getting a bowl game in a couple of years. Austin's getting a bowl game and one other. So they'll be fine. They'll be 5-17 bowling soon after.
That's all we want. Teams under 500 going to a bowl game. All right, Jay Norvell, head coach in Nevada. He complained about transfers, loses two of his better players for next season, and he is now worried that Group of Five schools are just going to become a minor league for Power Five schools. Does a valid opinion to you? Like, what do you take on his opinion?
I think he's talking to too many college basketball coaches. See, transfer's an issue. Here's the thing. I was double-checking to see where these guys are at and if they're a graduate or not. They're clearly not the case because they're both sophomores. The reason we don't know, here's the thing. What he's complaining about is because you could transfer, like, kind of in the middle, not in the middle of the night, but go to the website, log on, I choose a transfer. That's basically what it is to transfer. Speak to somebody, I want to transfer from Nevada. The only difference now is, like, coaches can't restrict where you go. Because there's I think I've seen poking around, like, one of the safeties from Southern Utah, so maybe BYU fans, maybe we'll come here. There's McLean going to Oregon, possibly. Here, little small rumors early on. But I like the players having options. And so to block, what the thing is, you don't want to block where they can go. It's like typically any future schedule, whatever eligibility is left, plus conference player, he can be a jerk and block everybody. And this is fine. Like, he goes where he wants to go. And I get it. Guys may want a better opportunity because reading what he said, like, well, bottom of the roster may transfer down. And if you're great, you may transfer up because you went the 1 year. But there's a couple years ago, I don't recall who it was, but some guy from the MAC went to Alabama. He was really good wide receiver, did nothing with Alabama, like 20 catches after being like the best guy in the MAC. So that situation could happen as well. But I think it's year one of this thing. It's year one. I lose two players, two starters on my team. They're gone. And it's a big deal because next year Nevada should be pretty good. But losing McLean is a big issue, I think, for what he can do. But he's overreacting because how many players normally leave each year? Has he even looked at that? Because there's always a handful of guys leaving anyways. What if the same number is the same that transfer out for a variety of reasons? There just happens to be two that go on to, like, I want a better opportunity for whatever reason. Let the players do what they want. They're already restricted as much as it is. They probably should get a few bucks here and there more than their stipend. They can't get any sort of job. They're shackled on campus all the time. Let them have some options, because if Norvell got to go back to Texas, that Arizona State, he'd be gone in 5 seconds. You know what I mean? Like, what's the big deal?
He is Jeremy Moss. It's at Jeremy Moss on Twitter. That's MAUSS. It is Mountain West Wire, MWWire.com. Jeremy, as always, we appreciate your time.
Thanks, guys. See ya.
Thanks.
All right, so we got a lot to do in a short amount of time.
Yeah, we do.
Go to break, Jared.
Happy Hanukkah. Are the Golden Knights in a playoff spot?
No. They didn't play last night, so they couldn't really get into one. Not many games last night. They are still on 29 points, still two back of the Sharks for the last Pacific spot and one back of the Wild for the last spot, last wild card spot. The Stars did win, so they're 4 points behind the Stars for the second to last wild card spot. So, Hanukkah schedule kicks off tonight against the Capitals. That's what they got to do. They got to win, get in this Hanukkah playoff spot.
Mazel tov.
All right. There is not a better setup for sports radio than rival coach gets on his high horse and then radio host shoots him down off his high horse. Mentioned it with Jeremy, but Jay Norvell, head coach of Nevada, complained about transfers to Nevada Sportsnet. The new rule that Jeremy mentioned is you don't have to get approval from your coach to transfer. You just go through the compliance office. And Nevada has had its best wide receiver and one of its best defensive backs announce their transferring in the last few days. Jay Norvell, not happy. Here is his quote. Because we have a good staff and we do a good job of identifying talent that's Pac-12 talent, that's a Power 5 talent, and then we develop them to be good players, we get penalized for doing a good job. That's something the Coaches Association and the presidents have to address. It can have a really bad effect on college football, and especially mid-majors, because we don't want to be a minor league team for Power 5 schools, where we go recruit kids, bring them here, and they play for a couple years, and they're all league players, and then they leave. That's the possibility for all mid-majors at this point with this new rule. My question, what the hell is he talking about? This has always been the possibility.
And if he wanted to go work for a Power 5 school, he'd be gone within like 10 minutes.
Like all Jay Norvell is saying, like, kids have always been able to transfer. All Jay Norvell is saying is that he wants to block kids' transfers and make them stay and play for him when they don't want to stay and play for him. Like, he wants more control over his players. He couldn't possibly have some of open market where his players can go wherever makes their lives better. No, no. He needs to be the dictator. Like, I don't know. It's just ridiculous. Like, probably my favorite part of this is sort of the scaremongering of, we're going to be a minor league. Well, yeah, you are. You can't win the national title. So, yeah, you already are a minor league. But most transfers go down in level, not up. Very rarely do kids leave a Nevada to go to an Oregon and they're good at Oregon. Most of the time, kids transfer because they're not playing as much as they thought they were, and they go down, not up. Like, coaches complaining about transfers, you're always going to look dumb. Always. There's also some fun drama where one of the players that's transferring, his dad tweeted about this. Jay Norvell basically accused Oregon of tampering.
Oh, Jesus.
Is what happened there. So if one of these transfers ends up at Oregon, oh, that's going to be fun. So I'm cheering for both of them to go to Oregon and the rest of Nevada's roster to all go to Oregon.
Tyler, you're a bitch.